This is a production of Cornell University.
EA meeting January 19th, 2011.
All right, I'll call this afternoon's meeting to order. It's Wednesday, January 19th at 12:17 p.m. Are there any late additions to the agenda for today? No? Okay, then right along to business of the day. Wanted to continue our discussion on the climate survey. Based kind of on what we talked about last week, the executive committee in our meeting kind of continued the discussion and talked about putting together some basic language for an ask to President Scorton to do a resolution. That's not a resolution, but just an ask to do a climate survey. So I'm going to kind of pass that around for people to take a look at and see if we're on the mark. But basically, what I wrote was saying that, you know, in our continued discussion of morale in the workplace, that we recommend or formally request that a climate survey be completed and that we be stakeholders in that. So if you want to just take a second to read it, and then we can discuss a little bit. And Kat, I'm sorry, I should have thought to email it to you. Anyone have thoughts, additions, changes, dislikes?
What do you mean by institutional research?
That's office. An office on campus. Yes. That would be the ones who would create. Right. Yeah, that's their job is to do this.
Yes, it should be capitalized if it's not.
Sorry.
Yes. In the middle of the.
Yep.
Is it actually Institutional Research Center?
It's Institutional Research and Planning. Mm-hmm. That's the official title of the office. So maybe it should say the Office of.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mr. Parliamentarian, is this something that we have to vote on? How do we proceed?
We're just sending in the emails?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of asking for two things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So did no one do just the informal ask?
Well,
formal, but I mean, everything is kind of formal.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a formal ask, and I think, you know, we talked a little bit in the executive committee, and we can continue to talk in here, but I think our role is to make requests to the president and not, I feel like, why are we asking if he thinks it's okay if we ask to do this? And I don't know if how other people feel about that, but I think if we as a group think it's important that we do it, then we just make the ask regardless of if he agrees with it or not. That's his purview. He can come back and say, I don't agree. And if we don't think it's an important issue, then we shouldn't put any ask forward at all.
I just, thought from the last conversation about doing a resolution or not. And I thought the whole thing was we were moving towards a resolution, but it was just the idea, is this even on his radar now, or is it going to be like a surprise? And I thought the ask was just to see, was he thinking about this, was he kind of okay, and then moving towards a formal resolution.
We decided at our meeting that we didn't think it needed a resolution.
Yeah. We can certainly change our minds here, but that this was just something for us to get our conversation going.
I mean, I guess just informally, kind of a straw poll for people: do we as a group think that we need a climate survey? Mm-hmm. I mean, just show of hands who thinks we need one.
I think it's a good idea. Mm-hmm.
And if we wrote to President Skorton and asked what he thought about that, and he said, "I don't like it," would that change anyone's thought on the importance of it?
Yeah.
You would want it more.
Oh.
but you wouldn't say, "Oh, if he doesn't want it, I don't want it anymore."
No, I would want it more.
But I think, I mean, it's not like I don't want it, but I think it will lead to a conversation because he will be the one to implement it. And I'm just saying it like, resolutions is our only formal decree that we have, or authoritative power. And I mean, and I think that if we all are unanimous and he's on board, I think a resolution means a lot more than just a simple email request, because I think it's an official decree that we want it. Mm-hmm. And I thought that the first email was just a simple gauge. I like this email, and if he comes back and say, yes, our climate survey is needed, I would still opt that we need to pass a resolution on that.
Yeah, I think that sounds good. I mean, because the resolution, we want to be pretty formal and be very specific in the asks of everything. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a way to get it started.
Right.
And this warrants a response from the president as well, because it'll be an official communication. And
it feels redundant to me to do this plus the resolution.
I guess we'll see what the answer is like. I mean, historically, the EA has not been a body that really pushes out a lot of resolutions, as compared to like the student assembly that actually has real, tangible things that they're working on. As policy changes or things that they're asking for, you know, and this is something that, you know, we're not going to be taking the work on. You know, we're asking him to start this work somewhere else on campus. Which,
Gary, you were shaking your head before.
I just don't think we should over-engineer this thing. I think this is nice and informal, and it's just, I think that's the sort of relationship we should have with the president. And I don't know what he's thinking, but I'm sure this isn't at the top of his plate.
Right.
And he's going to say, "Mary, make this happen."
Right. He's going to pass this down.
Do we want to be included in the plan?
Yeah. Right. And I put that in there, that we be included in the development of the survey, and that we get the data from it.
So really, this is more of a follow-up with Mary.
So should this say a comprehensive plan along with, like put together a comprehensive plan along with EA to assist Unit M? Because it sounds like you're asking them to come up with a plan all on their own. Is that just the way I'm reading it?
No.
Which plan are you talking about?
He's talking about the final plan.
Yeah,
the final plan.
To assist Unit.
I know where he is, but I was wondering if it was related to which part of the paragraph.
It's the end of the second paragraph.
Mm-hmm. I think what David is saying is, should we say that put together a comprehensive plan with the support of the assembly or with input
if
from the assembly?
If you want to be involved in that. I mean, if you want to ask them to do the whole plan yourself, that's fine, but I think we would want to be involved, wouldn't we? That's kind of our job, right?
Other thoughts? Yeah. So if we add something like that in to say comprehensive plan with support from EA as appropriate. other thoughts?
Yeah, it may be that by asking for the comprehensive plan to address morale, if you sort of came to the president in a little bit in the box, and it may be that what you really want to do is to start a dialogue with the president regarding morale and what can be done about it, but to come out of the gate with, you know, we want to do a survey and then we want a comprehensive plan, and not put that in the form of resolution, which is your, you know, your way of presenting yourself officially to the university. You know, you may, with an informal letter, you want that sort of tone and relationship to the program now, maybe just, my perspective might be that it would be good to just say, hey, we want to start a conversation, a dialogue regarding this, find out where the university leadership is on this aspect, and how can the EA help, and then once you understand that better, then maybe you can draft a resolution to address that.
That's great. It could be that we find that morale is much better than what we anticipated.
Which I think would be great.
We could.
By the way, this is Andrew Page. He's on my communications committee.
What do other people think about that?
Well, I think we've already done some of that
in conversations
with him when he's been at earlier meetings. So that's why I think this wouldn't be a surprise, because in fact the last meeting that he attended, a good part of the conversation was about morale, and then the follow-up meeting with Mary Opperman, that was almost all that we talked with her about. So it's sort of continuing that conversation that we've already begun.
Would you want to put that in the letter? You know,
maybe.
Yeah. Preface.
Tanya, this is Pat. You may have mentioned it in the email, but one thing Mary mentioned is they're kind of how they determine morale is, you know, absenteeism and comp days and stuff like that, where this would also be a baseline to measure morale. If it turns out great and then morale is higher than we expected, that's great. But if it doesn't, it starts to give us a baseline, so anything we do going forward to help morale, please give us a measurement.
Right.
I might just also suggest the word engagement. That seems to be the word that's been driven and have been being measured more towards actual results and performance rather than morale, because morale is just having worked a lot in surveys, work in the past, it's just harder to get everybody on the same page to work morale meetings.
Right.
Because it's so individual to an individual. So, just a thought.
So if I make some revisions and shoot this around to people, can we refine it? Are we on the right track in general?
Yeah, I would suggest to make some revisions and give it the deadline and crank it out.
Well, we have another exec meeting next Tuesday, so maybe if we could have the feedback before that meeting, which is a short turnaround, but if that's possible.
Yeah. My meetings I can't handle.
Excellent.
All right, so I will make some revisions and pass it around, and we'll go from there. Election chair. So did anyone beside me and Leslie get the calendar?
No. Okay. It's not been circulated.
All right. So then I will just pass the rest of
it's not final.
Here's the tentative calendar of elections, but essentially the elections work will start mid-March and run through, David, when's the end of elections there? On the very bottom corner.
End of elections? Deadline for challenges?
Voting ends April 22nd.
So essentially a month. So mid-March to end of April with a couple of meetings in there. And I know, Curtis, you were possibly thinking about it.
There's an election chair.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you've given any more thought, and I'll give you the schedule and see if that works for you, so you have a lot going on in submissions as well. But is there anyone else besides Curtis who's interested? maybe co-chairing?
I don't think anyone could do the job as well as Curtis.
We've got a whole communications plan all set.
Yeah, Leslie's done a whole communications plan. And, you know, even regardless of whomever's the chair, we're all going to have to be really involved and invested in it this year because we've got to add six more people. So we've got to fill our empty seats or our soon-to-be vacancies plus six new ones. So, unless we'll talk more about the communications plan later, but there's a lot to be done, and hopefully everybody will jump in and help. But I can email that calendar out too, and if anybody has any concerns about the dates, but they're pretty similar to what we've done in the past.
So what happens if we end up without our election chair?
We flounder around aimlessly.
Okay.
Sorry, and I'll be going.
And Tanya.
Leslie. T.S. Eliot down the other end of the table. We flounder around.
Yes. But essentially, it's going to be getting the word out, which is primarily going to fall to the communications committee. We'll be expecting everyone to do kind of some informal meetings with maybe some target groups who we haven't had on the assembly in the past. There's a meeting that you coordinate for all interested assembly members, people who are interested in running. There's a meeting with Mary that you go to. And I think that
we were going to discuss that because it's nothing that she really necessarily needed to participate in, so maybe just being in conversation with EA members would be enough.
Instead of having her attend the information session.
Right. Because I think sometimes
she doesn't know why she...
Yeah.
But it would be great if people can put the date for the meeting with candidates on their calendar, because last year I was the only one there, and it would be great to just have other people talking about their experience with the assembly.
Just shout out when that is.
Gemma, can you tell us what that date is?
The campaigning meeting is what you're talking about, right?
Yes.
March 29th, and it's a regular EA time, but it's a Tuesday.
So is it 12:15?
12:15, yeah. So if anybody's even remotely interested in running, they should come to that meeting. Or even on the set, get them to come to that meeting.
So how many open seats will we have? Because we're adding six.
We're adding six, and then we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 terms ending this year.
But I hope not everybody's not going to run.
I hope so.
At least some of you are going to run.
Yeah,
right.
Well, so there'll be 13
seats
to go.
Seven people all want to be back here. Should we just have an election for the six new seats? Because I want to stay.
Right, but we have to be fair, because what if there's 15 people who want to run, plus the seven who are on here now?
So we're going to have 13 seats.
So there'll be 13 seats to fill, essentially.
What happens if we... don't have enough people to run the
reason. Then we have open seats, and then we go back to what we've done in the past, which is fill on demand.
With the appointment.
Yeah, by appointment.
We're at least one on demand.
And the criteria are more flexible now, so it's whoever you think would be appropriate to fill those positions.
So that's how we would do that. Any other thoughts on election stuff? And I'll send this calendar to everyone via email.
So there are two campaigning meetings.
Mm-hmm.
The other one's on the 23rd of March.
And that one's TBD.
Right, but for location. So is it?
Oh, okay. Sorry.
So were there two last time? I mean, are there always two?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So March
23rd. It's a draft calendar, so now's the time to... Right. Make any changes or suggestions, or
do we want to have two campaigning meetings? How many people showed up the last one?
We had four people who showed up.
Wasn't there one last year where no one showed up? And someone else was there. Nobody showed up.
But they're doing a regular meeting now.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah, well, I think there were like two or three of us that showed up to one, but no
there
people showed up.
Yeah.
Right.
No, they're on Tuesday.
One's on a Tuesday, one's on a Wednesday for this.
campaign meeting.
I mean, I think they're not a bad thing to have. And, you know, we could say if it's, you know, if we publicize them better. I mean, I don't know how well we got the word out last year with publicizing them and getting people there. So.
There's your
publicist. I know, who has a very comprehensive plan.
Well, I would agree that the meeting with Mary is not necessary. Mm-hmm. I mean, she came to one of these last year. But she came to the one that I was at.
Which I think ended up being the one that we just had her at.
Flying pens! Oh! Oh. I'm sorry.
Thanks, Tanya.
Turn ball!
Better club,
actually. I have to.
So,
you
so
okay,
I'm okay. Thank you, Gary.
Right.
A little bit of energy now, but I think I'll be okay.
So, yes, I think we can take off Mary's informal session.
So feel free to write on it, and we will fix it up.
There, how's that?
Great.
Okay. Any other?
I think it does make sense to offer
two
meetings on different days.
Right.
I agree.
And maybe we can just, as we get closer, have some people plan to come to one and some people plan to come to the other.
Yep.
But if we could have a couple of people come in. All right.
So when are we going to resolve the question of the election chair?
If I give you this, can you look at it with your stuff and make a decision next couple days?
Yes.
Cool. All right. No, I got that.
It's on the list.
It's on my list.
Right.
So moving on to report from the chair, a couple things. I sent our two resolutions to President Scorton, the one on expanding the EA from 13 to 19 members, and the one separating the duties of the vice chair and the communications chair, and he has responded in favor of both of those things, so he's accepted all of our changes. So,
woo-hoo.
And he's happy.
That's good.
That's that. We got a very nice letter from Terry Natoli for, let's see, Curtis and Pempa and Leslie and Amy and Beth were there with me last week in the lovely weather for the George Peter Award. Nancy was there too. And I'll just read what she said. She says, "There are no words to describe how grateful and honored I am that you chose me to receive the George Peter Award. I had the honor of meeting George on numerous occasions, and he was a very special man. Thank you all so much for attending the celebration. Although I was incredibly uncomfortable to be the center of attention," and she really was, "I want you to know how much this means to me, especially now that it's over. I thank you again, and I thank you all for your service to the Employee Assembly. Best wishes, Terry Natoli." So thank you for the lovely gift and cake.
And the article is in this week's
book. Great.
Oh, she's going to love
that. Yeah. I know she's on the front page.
Yeah. So, and that went really nicely, and she was very pleasantly surprised. For those who didn't know, she thought she was going to a book announcement party for one of the faculty members in her department, mm-hmm. and she got there, and they turned it on her, and she was incredibly embarrassed. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So, but I think those are my only two things. So moving along to the meeting minutes.
Is there another due date? No. Before you do that?
No, I don't have a date yet.
No, nothing
yet. Okay, I actually can do. I can do that. Okay. All right. So, sorry. One other thing before the meeting minutes. So every year, President Scorton and Tommy Bruce and them give us a certificate of appreciation. And we have one person who was on the EA last year who we have yet to give this to. So, Mr. Gary Stewart, here's your certificate of appreciation.
Thank you.
You're holding it forever.
I appreciate that.
I'm glad.
I got something to put on the wall. Thank you. I'm a lucky man.
Great speech.
You gotta go to seminars. You'll learn this in elections chair. You'll know.
All
we're off looking at the minutes now?
Yes, we'll take the minutes.
Motion approved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Sorry. I hadn't gotten to it yet. All right. So moving into committee reports, Leslie.
I sent around the communication plan for everybody to look at, but I did also kill it for you and copy it. So the communications committee met last week. I think we're, even though we didn't get going until the semester, I think we're off to a good start. We decided to put this EA survey on hold for a while to focus on the elections because they're coming up so quickly. So we're looking to send that out in April, I believe. So I've sent out the elections committee plan. Our objectives are to increase awareness. Oh, somebody send me back a copy. Send them all out. Recruit new candidates and encourage voter participation. I want to give a big thank you to Andrew, who did the bulk of the work on this. So if you and Nancy, who's also on the committee, can chime in at any time to back me up here. But we basically put together a plan that reaches out to the various target audiences in a variety of ways: email, flyers, through different things, through the building ambassadors, and where we want to set up meetings to meet with the bargaining unit staff supervisors so that they in turn can encourage their employees, meet with them not only so they have buy-in, but then they can encourage their employees to run and or vote as well. So I'm going to be asking for volunteers to do that. Right now we've identified four supervisors that need to be met with, and if other people have additions to this list, we have John Kiefer, who's the director of facilities, Therese O'Connor, Campus Life Dining, Steve Devlin, Campus Life Facilities, and Rob Osborne, Campus Life Building Care. We just really think it's important to get their buy-in, especially when these particular employees don't have easy access to email and or mailboxes. So would anyone like to help by setting up a 10-minute meeting with these supervisors? I will take one.
I can help. This list, though, isn't going to get you into facility staff who work with academic buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Because John Kiefer, if I remember what was in the Chronicle the other day about the new organization for facilities, is working with what has historically been Campus Life buildings.
Okay.
So that's all of West Campus, North Campus, College Town. And so there are four other facilities managers who are doing the same thing with different units, different mm-hmm. groups of buildings. So
okay.
you're going to want to expand that list, I think.
Okay.
But Therese and Steve both work in my office.
Oh, awesome.
Rich Jensen? I don't know. We need the facilities director and the AP. I work with him.
Okay.
Almost every day.
Right. Well, and then as we start narrowing down to specific colleges and stuff, it would be great if people wanted to just take it upon themselves to bring a flyer and some information to the to the individual building managers if people still indeed do have those. Plus, we're going to have information going out for the building ambassadors group, and that's a group coordinated by Cheryl McGraw, and she sends out a mailing to them, but I think it's important for people to have face-to-face conversations with people as much as they can. So you said you would talk to
Therese and Steve. And so we're talking with them about how to reach staff and talk with staff about running. What is it? What's this?
Yeah, so we want them to disseminate the information to their staff members and to let them know that
that they will be supported.
So, we have talking points for them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. So we'll put together some sort of package.
Okay. I'm happy to talk with both of them.
All right. Does anybody know Rob Osborne?
No, he's helped us many times, so he's going to know exactly what you want.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. He's got both building care and the campus one housekeeping. Okay. I'm happy to help the housekeeper. All right.
You
want to
see John
Keeper? Sure. I'll take Rob Osborne. And we could probably ask him if there are other people that we should make contact
with.
Anyone else know of anyone we're missing?
The police are bargaining unit, aren't they? Mm-hmm.
They're a bargaining unit. What I've been told by Kathy Zoner and the that works with her is that they actually like to get their stuff in the paper.
And they probably do check their email, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But if you sent them to the central office, they make sure they got it.
Okay. So if everyone who agreed to do that could have that meeting set up by around the first week of February, that would be excellent.
I kind of know Kathy by association. I was going to be with her and contact her.
Okay. So could you at least send her an email or give her a call?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
I'm not stepping on any toes, but I do want to have to wear a wig.
No.
Because they're a bargaining unit.
Mm-hmm.
We're asking them to be.
They're
still
bold.
They're still bold.
And they can still run.
And
we may, at some point, need help posting flyers and that kind of thing if when we identify what's not being reached and by the communication committee, what we need help with. So we'll be asking for help with that. What else?
At the end of it all, it would be great to create a report on the effectiveness of the communications for the election. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if we have any past data on election turnout or the number of candidates who are running for the employee assembly.
I mean, we should know who
the records of how many people voted.
How many candidates got how many votes,
that sort of thing.
So that data as well.
Yeah. Do you think you could put that on your list, like data from the last 3 years?
Yeah.
You could get that too.
Sure.
I think that would be great.
I think probably just total number of votes and how many people ran.
So.
The only thing that we'd have though would be as far as candidate information would be from last year, right?
No, I think we have results going back several years at this point.
Okay. Yeah, so really all we need to know is how many candidates ran and how many people voted.
Yeah.
That's our
voter turnout?
Yeah.
How many people voted for each candidate?
No, voter turnout.
Voter turnout. Because that's what we're benchmarking our communication.
How many people ran and how many people voted?
Right. Okay.
And so the sidebar, how many people ran, how many seats were open? Obviously, this year's going to be more seats open.
Right.
More of a ratio
of the
department.
And we probably run.
Last year, did we fill
give
for the first time?
Raffle off of three.
If
you run for office.
Left
Mother is really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's what are those things called now, Nancy?
The display is on there.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Right,
yeah.
It's not here, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that. Thank you.
And we're going to do some Facebook
ads.
Got it. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Crystal, that's still yours, right?
Nice job.
Yeah.
So I just have a question. On the dates of the voting concludes and the election results, is the date the voting concludes 4/22nd? Is that recent?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, but I just heard the 27th.
22nd.
Yeah. The election results actually Crawford comes out on the 28th. Do you want to time that with that, or you?
Yeah, I just kind of made that up because I didn't really know what we did. I was like, I don't know how we announce this normally. I mean, do we could put it immediately, as soon as it's ready, we could immediately put it up on Facebook and on the EA site and then have it on top print. I didn't know what we normally did.
So that is my question, is this, how soon after the voting concludes do you know what the results are?
Well, we have to wait until Monday, right, for challenges. And then if we have no challenges, then it doesn't take long to run the numbers, correct?
Well, it depends on how the election rules are structured. Mm-hmm. The results can be ready within a few hours of the election being mm-hmm. over, but if you don't want to disclose them until challenges have been resolved, then...
I can't remember, what did we do last year?
I mean, this is so challenges are would have to be in by Monday, and we have election results coming out on Tuesday. So
what are challenges?
Yeah, that's what my question.
You put chalk on a PlayStation and put chalk on, or you email me, Sam, the list of people you shouldn't have Sam that I didn't have access to. So I think that's the list for the election was unfair.
Got it.
And how many times does that happen?
I think it's actually pretty limited. I mean, mostly, you know, vote tampering or...
Right. Because it's not something that normally happens.
No, never.
Yeah, never. So I think probably we could say we are announcing the elections on Tuesday with no problem.
We go to press on Tuesday at noon, so we would have to have that written and then left by then.
Before then. Okay. We could probably do that.
From Friday to Tuesday?
Yeah.
So it'll be in Thursday paper.
Then
we could yank it if we needed to, right?
Yeah. The backup story.
The backup story.
Yeah. Backup story.
Ballot tamper exposed.
Does that seem doable, Ari? Does that sound good with you?
Any other thoughts or comments on the writing?
I am. Under the open forum for the bargaining unit staff, I'm wondering how are you going to set up the open forum and to get the employees' attention for the forum.
Yeah, well, we had an idea we may do open forums, but that may just evolve into the campaign meeting. I don't know. I mean, what was...
I think that was dependency upon the outcome of the meeting with the supervisors
right.
of those staff, if they're open to that idea of having open forum with their directs. So that was a dependency on 10A, and it's not in the milestones here because we just weren't sure if it was going to happen or not.
Right, if we were going to have the resources for it and or... Like, if we met with a supervisor and we felt like they weren't receptive, or we didn't think that the information was going to get passed down, then we would try to schedule a meeting with those staff. I don't think, although if the supervisor is not supportive of their staff hearing about the EA, they might not be supportive of their staff participating in the EA.
True.
But well, it's just the communication plan's job to get the information out there.
And the supervisor is supposed to be aware of your running before you run.
Right.
So hopefully they would have that conversation with the supervisor, and that could be part of that informal discussion with them today. If you're interested, talk with your supervisor.
What is your thought about it?
I'm not sure. I was thinking about maybe the communication committees would send a letter to individually to all. I'm not sure mm-hmm. whether that's a good idea or whether you have come up with this idea.
How do you usually find out information about what's going on campus?
I think the bargaining unit just gets a letter, like for example, from the transportation service, they receive letters and mm-hmm. also like United Way, to send letters and...
Do you have a mailbox?
And some important announcements from, through the main, you know, administrative office.
So it gets sent to Trillium. It comes through our office and it goes to Trillium, right, and then the supervisors distribute it.
Okay.
It used to be that we put them in Patrick.
Right. So we give the supervisor the flyer, and then the flyer will get out to the staff.
I know in the past that you guys have done in the summer months, like August, you do a meeting of all dining staff, and then they have also had them, I think, in January before school kicks off. Is there one plan for this? You already have it.
Didn't you already have the January dining meeting?
I'm not sure. Did you? I gave last year.
It would have happened already because the dining halls are already open.
Oh, okay.
I was asking about it to cover it.
Oh, yeah.
And they said they were going to change it. Okay. They may have had a smaller thing, but not the great big thing.
Well, I'll ask Therese when I meet with her.
That would be great. Yeah. That would be a really good time for somebody just to stand up quick and make a good
idea. Absolutely. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. Usually my department gets invited, usually FSA gets invited, and I didn't hear about something. That's why I was wondering. We went to the August one.
Did President Gordon learn anything on you?
We'll ask him to do that again.
It would be nice if we could cobble some texts together for him. It was just really simple and make the ask without a lot of high rhetoric about democracy and everything else. You know, because people, it doesn't even matter if it comes from Scorton. People may or may not read it. If it's just like a big block of copy, I don't have time.
You want to help write that?
I'd be glad to.
Awesome. Gary, do you want me to send
you want me to write that down?
That'd be great. Thank you.
I mean, he knows the drill, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he'll do what we would like him to do.
Maybe,
you know,
more of like the deadline. More like the deadline. Like here's the deadline and here's the campaign we're meeting.
And let's drop in some text about Justin Bieber. Did I say it last night?
Yeah.
Bieber?
Okay. Maybe do a video.
It has been an email.
I'll also be tying in some of this information into the EAE news, which will come out probably in mid-February. So if you have any items for the EAE news, please send them to me by February 4th. If there's particular things from your committees or areas that you want to include.
And also just to throw in a plug for throwing out kudos to people, because we've had a very sad few kudos for staff members. So if you see someone do something good, encourage, you know, write in, or encourage your supervisors or whatever to write in, because we're going to have a very small little party of three people. Because we're going to do a party, remember? So if you can encourage people to...
That could be part of the supervisor meeting, even. And hey, don't forget, staff member gets to go to a lunch and somebody writes in something nice about.
Yeah, a lot of times it's just day-to-day stuff.
Right, it's supposed to be that day-to-day.
You know, I take my first swing through here in the morning, usually around 4:30, and it's like, you know, there's folks out shoveling the steps. You know,
come in at 4:30.
Yeah.
He's serious. He's committed.
Oh, I do see him at the gym.
Right. So I live like a mile and a half from here, so I come back, crank out a bunch of emails, either go to Helen Newman or the Y or someplace, go back home, come back.
Wow.
So I get a lot of crap done.
Well, you know, they say if you get older, you have insomnia more.
Yeah, I get, you know, my shit lives now, too. Pardon my French.
Anything else on communication? That's it.
All right. Moving on to old business. Jason, you want to talk about the cell phone committee? You guys met, right?
Yep, they just met right before this meeting. It really stems from a change in the IRS policy that said that you have to track personal usage on business accounts, and that kind of kicked off the review of the whole, what's it called, the personal communication device policy at Cornell. They just finished renegotiating the Verizon contract, and from doing some of that, they're able to save $163,000.
And can you explain to us what that means, what this means? The email we got about our new Verizon plan?
So,
not sure.
Essentially, you're going to have an additional savings. Right now, you get 19% on just your phone line. Now you will get 19% on your data line as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
And if you sign up for paperless billing, you get an additional 3%.
Okay, but yeah, it's not. But if you have a family share plan, it's not eligible.
If you on the $9.99 line, on the second line, but it is on the first line.
Oh, okay.
So that's how I read it.
This is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. It's a good thing.
Okay.
Do you get that sense personally, too?
Yeah, I
got one. Verizon phone.
All right, can you forward that to me?
I
can
get it.
Can
I get it? Yeah. I'll send it.
Because Verizon is the larger vendor at Cornell, they started with Verizon and they've finished that. They're going to do the same thing with AT&T, and they suspect AT&T is going to match Verizon because they want to, because they want to keep the business. Ultimately, with some additional changes and things, they're hoping for like a $500,000 savings. One of the things is if a department pays for many individual plans, they want to move them into a pool, and a pool account can have greater cost savings because then the minutes are, it's like instead of buying like, let's say, 10 200-minute plans, you're buying like one 20,000-minute plan that's shared among all of them, and then it's a way for them to save money. So they're working
through.
It's
a family plan.
And so, yeah,
really big family.
We're all one big happy family.
And we know we're going to meet again. We're looking at reviewing the actual personal communication devices policy, which is policy 3.24. And looking to make some structural changes to that document that bring it more up to date with the latest in the IRS change rules and personal accounts and individual accounts and pool accounts and all that, and changing all that. So today was the kickoff meeting.
Thank you for attending.
Good luck. That's complicated stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
It really is. I mean, I got it. I told Beth I would take it on because, you know, I was once in this boat where I had a Cornell provided phone and my personal phone, and it just got so messy. And then they're starting to see a trend now of trying to justify that you do need a phone and that Cornell should pay for it, because it's getting to this point where they said, like, bandwidth, you know, Cornell used to pay for your bandwidth at home, but now it's like a staple that everybody gets for their life. So I don't know if we'll see some changes in how cell phone usage is paid for by the university. So. But the new, they're looking, the person that kicked this off, Cindy Jefferson, she's new to Cornell, about 3 months. She's been tasked to try to find $30 to $40 million in cost savings, and the cell phone piece is just one component of it. So if she can do that with, you know, if they can get a half a million here and changing some contractual alignments and changing of plans and stuff.
It's a good thing.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jason.
And Linda, Linda and I had a meeting a couple weeks ago,
yeah.
And Linda brought up an interesting opportunity about the diversity council. Can you talk about that?
Well, just to get from where it started, immediately after the meeting that we had with Mary, where Mary kind of said to us as a committee, what would you guys recommend doing, or what could you do to try to help with the morale or engagement issue on campus? So I went down and I spoke with my supervisor, Lynette, about it, and one of the things that I've heard, as we sit here, and personally I experienced it this past fall in
the community, which I think really differentiates in some cases when somebody may choose to stay or leave the university, is there are times that certain individuals around campus behave uncivil to one another. You can have different points of view on something, and rather than having a rather than having a respectful way of communicating with one another, it gets kind of dirty. And I think that Congress right now is looking at this as an issue because they're saying it's a nationwide issue. Civility is actually one of our mission. If you look at our mission, it says, you know, in an environment of collegiality and civility. And we've heard in many cases it's a supervisor who's not being very civil in the way that they treat their staff. So I think that that really does make for a productive or not productive environment if people are in a place where they feel like they're treated with civility all the time versus being in an environment where either they have a supervisor who's schizophrenic and you don't know what day they're going to be civil and what day they're not, or they're generally, you know, uncivil all the time. And I think it really makes a huge difference in people's day-to-day life. So I was talking to Lynette about that, and I said, I really think the civility thing is a piece of the morale issue. And I think in these times with the pressure that people who are typically maybe only randomly uncivil have become really uncivil because they're under so much stress and they're taking it out on people around them. And so I said to her, I said, you know, that's one thing. If there was something that we could do around saying, can we just really make it a standard expectation that civility is something that everyone deserves, you know, a fundamental right of being an employee here, and or do we need to lay out what civil behavior is and do some training? So anyway, what we got in the conversation is she said, well, the University Diversity Council, which the UA had said that they wanted to take a little bit more of a role in the University Diversity Council, and one of the things that they really want to work a lot with is the bias response training, totally revamping it, and maybe not even necessarily calling it that. She says, well, gosh, seems to me that this topic of civility may be a very important piece of what they're going to build into this overall training for the university. And if the university assembly does feel that this is something important that we might want to look at, it might make sense for one member or two members of the university, the employee assembly, to come and sit at these meetings as we're talking about the redesign of the bias response program and really pronounce and make sure that that civility piece is put into that program. And it could be a really big contribution because that program will then be done all over campus, probably student faculty staff. So I just wanted to put it out there as a possible opportunity for us, and I really do think that the civility thing is very real, and having personally experienced it, you know, between us and the child care center debate, because people were very heated and very emotional, and in fact the president did write something about civility subsequent to the decision around that. And I've just heard it, you know, little tidbits of it from around the table when people talked about changes that have happened and how people have been treated. So I just throw it out there as a thought and an opportunity to see what everybody else thought about it.
I think it's awesome. And it's really important. And people should be treated with civility, regardless of who their boss is or how high up the ladder they are. I think it's a good policy, you know, resolution type policy that the EA could push and really make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
The grad students are also thinking of the same thing.
Wow.
The same issue came up at the last GPSA meeting about. There was a committee meeting that turned particularly ugly, and it's the president of the GPSA basically said, you know, this goes against what we believe in, this goes against how we do things, and, you know, we all deserve respect and civility, so you are not the first one to mention that in a meeting.
What are the repercussions? Let's say we have a supervisor after this policy is in place that's not being civil. What are the repercussions?
Well, that's the piece where I think it would need to be built into how can we ensure accountability if we're going to go forward and say this. Does it need to be looked at to be integrated in things like performance reviews? Because to make something real, you know, I've been in organizations that have values, and they say, here's our values, and they do nice glossies, and they go on the lawn, and they're never really spoken about again except we have orientation. And then, you know, it kind of becomes a joke. And then the companies that do it, or the organizations that do it and do it right, are the ones that actually integrate it into promotion criteria, mm-hmm. into hiring criteria, actually looking for that in people that they hire, in performance review, and in the reward system, the people who do it very well. So, you know, it would be neat to go forward and say, we feel that civility, treatment of civility, is a basic right of any Cornelian. And that, you know, representing the employees, we'd like to say that, and that we would like to see it built into accountability so that those who are not behaving civil have an opportunity for growth and development and education.
Yeah.
And ultimately, if it does not continue, then, you know, other decisions may need to be made. But something to that effect, and then actually build it into helping it to be part of the education process. So that's, I put it out there, actually a really great book just came out on civility that was done for 10 years worth of research of two university professors, not here, who really have looked at the very tangible and real negative effects lack of civility has had on work environments, everything from increased healthcare costs down the board. And it's pretty powerful stuff to show the real tangible negative impacts it has on an organization when people are not treated with civility.
What's the book called?
I can send the name of it to you when I get down to my desk, because I have a copy of it.
Yeah, get up for Kate. She'll get you the book.
All right, now, Gary.
I think one of the thing that this whole thing too, there's a big upside that I think is worth fleshing out about being decent. And like saying thank you. I mean, there's a self-serving component to it. I always think when I was at the Ithaca Journal, I've written an opinion page for 10 years. You know, I got the crap kicked out of me every day for 10 years. And people would call up and say, you know, hi Gary, thank you for the article in the paper, but, you know, blah, 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 blah. I can count on one hand how many times somebody called up and just said thank you without any but to it. And in the future, when they call, I'd go through the wall for that person. That was the person who thanked me. And what did it take? Nothing. And what did it take to thank anybody with email? You know, and I'm always shocked with Scorton how he is like gold on that stuff. You send him something, even if it's just minutia, thanks for this, appreciate it. That took him 15 seconds. That's the president of Cornell. You know, and I just think there's so it's not just about like they do this or else. There's some payback to being civil.
Mm-hmm. There's apparently a book out called something like A Year of Thank Yous, and it's about someone who decided every day to write somebody a thank you note and about the impact that it had on that person. So it made me think of it.
Well, thank you for that.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure. I was curious about, because I didn't go to the Halcraft leadership program, but I know, but I did go to Turning Points, and, you know, we talked a lot about the pillars, the university and collegiality, and that kind of thing, and I think it was a real eye-opener for people, and I think people really took a step back and thought, you know, what I do impacts everybody around me all the time. So I'm just curious, you know, is there a component, I'm sure there is, but a component of that in the supervisor training, and or maybe it should be illuminated a little bit more, because I don't know if they're being reinforced about that.
Yeah, and I think it does touch upon it. Mm-hmm. I do think it's something that's worth a standalone piece on it to really talk about it, talk about what happens if you don't, and what happens to Gary's point. How much that just little bit makes such a huge difference.
Well, I think it's also interesting. I think this kind of the kind of supervisor who may mean to not seem civil would also be receptive to the kind of data that comes out of a book like you're talking about,
right?
Because what if they're, you know,
well, that person probably doesn't recognize him or herself as being uncivil.
Well, that's very true, because I had a supervisor. I mean, I have to say that Cornell is very supportive, and they actually fired my supervisor for uncivil behavior. I mean, that's why he got fired.
Yeah.
So, you know, he went through all the specific channels, so it did work in our case. But I know there's a lot of people out there that are stuck.
Yeah, I think I remember maybe it was almost 2 years ago that we had a conversation about certain faculty members who
And I think I think part of the problem is that there's no mechanism, at least that I know of, that staff members can confidentially provide feedback on their, like when I do a performance evaluation, it's my supervisor's feedback to me, but I don't necessarily get to give feedback on my supervisor. And, you know, in going through the HALCRAFT program, you know, you do this, you know, 360-degree feedback, and you get feedback from your staff, and you get feedback from those above you and those below you and all around you, and that's really eye-opening. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, just in the performance dialogue thing, that maybe we should move towards something that enables staff to provide feedback on their supervisor for their performance evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there are a lot of people here who do very well going up the chain and do very poorly going down the chain.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's simplistic on just, you know, maybe five things that are
mm-hmm.
really important,
mm-hmm.
so, you know, treats with civility,
mm-hmm.
Provides opportunity for development, you know, just a few things so that it doesn't have to be a huge long thing
right.
that people could do with enough work, it would be huge. So anyway, I did want to throw it out there, and what I could do is at the beginning of the book, they give you kind of a series of different facts around civility that they found in the research, so I could take it and put it into kind of a presentation format and send it to you guys if you'd be interested in looking at it, to look at some of that really hard data that they collected over the last 10 years to show what that impact is, and then maybe we can think about more if it's something worth of doing, like the resolution generally saying this is a fundamental right, we want this to be a fundamental right, and by the way, it's in our mission, civility, and maybe some suggestions for what we think, you know, that we'd like to see people held accountable to it. And I do believe there are places in the university where they are really good about holding people accountable. You know, before I came here, when I was at CIT, we were getting much better about that, and there have been some situations we dealt with where people had to change their behavior because they had not had, whether it was like cursing at their coworkers all the time or whatever it is, and if they were not behaving civil, and they were held accountable to it.
Some people are just unchangeable.
And some people are unchangeable, and it's not the right place to be if that's what the expectation, a job, it should be job expectations, honestly,
mm-hmm.
is basic civility.
I think, I agree with everything you're saying, and I think there also needs to be support and training for supervisors of people, of everyone, but of people who are not civil, in how to be the change agent or to help facilitate that process, because there are supervisors who don't know how to do that or who choose not to, and it needs to not be an option. I mean, so it seems like, yes, adding it into the performance dialogue process and all those processes is important, but there also has to be another level of education and training about how to handle it,
mm-hmm.
when it comes up.
Mm-hmm. I got an interesting case of civility with the video that was released from the hotel school professor. Because there's a twofold thing there.
Yep.
Was the student responsible
right.
for all the times that
right.
him and the classmates, and then what was his reaction to show how civility freezes, incivility freezes civility?
Right.
Interesting to just as an objective, and I'm sure we all have an awful lot of
hit.
So, yeah.
The only thing I now thinking about this is just the word civil and
mm-hmm.
uncivil, and I think it kind of might be viewed as problematic because the word civility is what is right defined by the majority in the society,
mm-hmm.
and I think a lot of the examples are using is respect issues,
mm-hmm.
and I think that maybe if we're trying to develop these terms more, we might not want to use the word civility because the people who define civility, you know, what's being civil, might not be what the marginalized or the person who's being oppressed would feel in that definition. And so, I mean, and I think that respect is a part of the seven pillars. So I think we already have a word there. That works for it, and it's actually more inclusive to what we're trying to get at.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe it's not defining a whole new term, but going back to the seven pillars, value pillars, and how we use them and implement them in our work.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So I'll pull together this presentation. I think your point is very well. Respect in the workplace, I think, is a...
Well, I do think
it's
civility,
because,
you know, it's like going back to the civil rights movement, they were saying that, you know, the freedom riders and people were being uncivil.
Mm-hmm.
where national instability to the cauldron, because that's what the white dominant culture defines.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we were trying to get at is respect. So like, even though a supervisor might say you can do something, you're not, that's not being civil
mm-hmm.
in his eyes, because he defines what the policies are. It might be civil to him, unlike the idea of just respect, which is a mutual understanding between both parties.
Okay. So it sounds like you were bringing two concepts to us. One was this diversity council potentially
yep.
wanting to have EA representation, and then the other one was moving in the direction of civility or respect as a concept to push.
Right.
So are
the two would work hand in hand.
Okay.
If we decided it was a concept we wanted to, that would be one way that we could do it, because as they're going through that training, it might be good to have an EA person that would attend that
mm-hmm.
just to ensure that piece was factored in.
Okay.
So that's why it's kind of two sides of the thing.
But we'll be hearing from you later once the decision is made about direction and whether you want to have EA representation on the Diversity Council. Is that
Lynette said that if we felt we wanted to do that we should let her know.
Okay.
So I think they have a fairly aggressive time frame to get it done. So I think it would probably need to be, you know, in the next couple of weeks that we should let her know if we decide we want to do that. Because they're looking at having a design done and everything by the end of the semester. At least the framework of the design, the actual design of the program will have to take longer than that for what they feel needs to be included. So that's why if we think that's an option, if we don't want to do that, then the other piece of just really thinking about how we can come forward with a voice to say we feel that people treating each other with respect is a fundamental right of everyone living here. And that, or however we choose to say it, just as a statement across the board.
Do we want to just draw a poll about whether we want to be included on the council or the committee?
Yeah. People think we'd want someone representative on the committee? Yeah.
Is there anyone
who
might be interested in that?
I mean, I would certainly be interested, but
me too.
Somebody else. Hopefully, and I are both interested and
yeah.
willing
okay.
to participate.
Okay. I'll let Lynette know that.
Okay.
And then that way, we could have done it via resolution, but we could also do it via legal down to Lynette and say, hey, we've got people interested. You know, would you be able to just start adding them to the list? And that might be a little bit more expedient.
Yeah.
yeah. But the resolution's more about that we think this is a fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Then you could always use the EA column as often as the police open to.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we want to continue to have the second half of the discussion about the resolution, and I'm not sure we're ready to
right.
do
right.
it.
But I can
right.
write on that presentation
yeah.
part. I'll send out the name of the book. It's a really good book. Actually, I have another one that's called Project Civility, which is a quote for every single day, and it's like, when someone cuts you off instead of giving them the middle finger, give them the peace sign. You know, there's like all these like little tips every single day that you can do, just some little things like this. Say thank you today. Make sure you say it 10 times. You know, they're like nice little quotes for the day that supposed to help create a more civil society. There's a lot of really neat books out there because I've been kind of looking into it over the last month or so.
I really like Curtis's point about the word respect.
I just think
it's such a stronger word. The more inclusive word, you get a lot of stuff under there.
I think it would enable us to review the way that respect is written right now in the Skills for Success or
yeah.
whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure that it's inclusive now of the concepts that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So it could be just expanding on instead of recreating.
Does Hale Kraft stop by the training sessions at all?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, he's a great man. He really is.
Can I mention the CARES one real quick?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everybody got Beth's email
mm-hmm.
that it's up and running. I wish she was here to hear this. Thank you, but she just did a phenomenal job on it. She really took it and ran with it. So you'll
send her kudos.
Okay.
Is that in the manuscript?
She did a great job, and I just wanted to remind you also that part of the policy that we made is that when the money runs out, that the EA is going to help refund it. so we have enough because we raised the limit to $2,500, so there's enough in there. When we started it for 8 incidents, we already used one, so we could be hearing, hopefully not, that it doesn't have to be used would be a good thing. And if people don't have to have the money about, we could be running a fundraiser within the next year or so. But it'll be, we'll put that in the EA News, it'll be in paw print, we're really going to spread it all over.
I had a question about that, actually. One of my coworkers, I think Monday, had, well, I'm not exactly sure what happened, but some kind of like brain aneurysm or a hemorrhage.
Mm-hmm.
She's in the hospital indefinitely. Would that qualify?
It definitely could qualify, in particular, because there's probably a lot of things in terms of maybe needs that she'll have above and beyond. So, yeah, I can't say unilaterally because it's the committee that would really need to discuss the case and the circumstances. If it's, family members who need to travel between here and I have to
know
who the person is,
she's
up and strong. Right now, so that's a lot of travel in from for family members. So it might be an extra amount of gas. It might be staying up there. So something like that, I definitely think should be brought.
I think it should be, the application should be filled out.
Okay.
And obviously she can't do it, but someone can do it for her on her behalf.
Yeah. Well, there's. Okay. Let me talk to a couple people that I work with that are kind of like handling.
There's some financial information questions asked on the form, so you would have to have a family member.
Okay.
And they help out.
I'll check it out.
We had a similar situation over the holidays. Our HR crisis manager on call, and we had a faculty member, lecturer, who was traveling with a bunch of students who had to have emergency surgery and could not leave the country they were in for 3 weeks. So his wife had to travel over there and find housing and everything. So I immediately said, please think about this if you don't need any help, because that would have been the kind of thing, too, that having to pay for her to come and travel there to be with him, and just halfway across the world. Those are the kinds of things. I think now that the new funds, the new criteria, where the other criteria would not necessarily have funded things like that.
Is that the guy in Kenya or something like that?
India.
Whatever happened?
It was just an emergency surgery. They didn't give me the details of what happened, but he had to have
the light
operated on
his back today. But they're back here now.
The date today. The physicians were giving him clearance to travel back on the 17th.
And we were able to help them.
Yep.
That might be
Well, the international select program also came to that and really helped out a lot too.
That didn't go to the care fund, though, did it?
No.
Mm-hmm.
No. Well, I said if you need the extra,
okay,
they were able to get in the medical care, but if you need the extra because of the extra cost your family flight and all that, so here's the application. We may still get an application, but that's where I was able to say, I think with the new criteria, they could qualify with the criteria if you formally had it, as well as the situation that you're talking about, too, could potentially qualify.
I just sent Beth a thank you email on behalf of the EA.
Thank you, Gary.
But I'm recommitted
Does anyone else have anything? We have 10 seconds.
Most
seconds. All very good. Leslie, and I don't know who's seconded. Pick someone. Thank you for coming, everyone.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.